Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Peter King in Orlando. The big three automakers are preparing for a possible auto workers union strike. The deadline just 3 hours away. Ford CEO Jim Farley tells CBS News the process has been frustrating.
We have always been able to find a deal that works for both sides. But in this case, we haven't even gotten a proposal back on our last proposal, which is hard to believe with everything at stake.
Correspondent Chris Van Cleve says we can expect a union announcement in an hour.
About 10 o'clock Eastern time, the United Auto Workers will have a Facebook Live announcement as to what plans they plan to strike at midnight. That will give us a sense as to how widespread this targeted strike will be.
The UAW wants a 40% wage hike over the next 4 years, along with other benefits improvements. It's the first time a sitting president's son has faced criminal charges, with Hunter Biden indicted for lying about his drug use when he bought a gun in 2018. CBS's Catherine Herridge says there's likely more to come.
Hunter Biden could still face more charges for alleged tax violations.
Today's news about this indictment being filed, unfortunately for Hunter Biden, it's probably the first chapter in what could be a long book.
Based on the court records, those tax charges could be filed here in Washington, D.C. or California, where Hunter Biden lives. IRS whistleblowers first told CBS News that they believe the evidence supports serious felony tax violations.
Hurricane Lee is hitting Bermuda with tropical force conditions. It's expected to weaken to a tropical storm and stay off the U.S. coastline. The worst is expected to be in Nova Scotia, but many New Englanders will know the storm is there. Weather Channel meteorologist Chris Warren.
Tropical alerts from southern Massachusetts all the way up through coastal Maine, even inland from down east Maine, could have some strong tropical storm force winds. As far as the worst of the weather, really look for things to go downhill tomorrow night.
New research shows our rivers are in dire straits.
A study conducted by researchers at Penn State and published in the journal Nature Climate Change says 70% of the 800 rivers studied in the U.S. and Central Europe are becoming oxygen deprived, and 87% have been getting warmer over the past 40 years. That could mean big problems for fish and other animals that live in the rivers. Rivers located in cities warmed the most. Rivers in agricultural areas recorded the most severe oxygen loss. Christopher Cruz, CBS News.
A Georgia judge says former President Trump and 16 others will be tried separately from two other defendants in the state election case. Trump attorney Sidney Powell and Kenneth Cheesebro will go on trial next month. This is CBS News.
When you think of hiring, think of Indeed. Their end-to-end hiring system helps you attract, interview, and hire candidates all in the same place. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
Civic Media radio stations providing your news, conversations, and fun you won't find anywhere else.
With news on WAUK The Shaw, I'm Stuart J. Wattles. Wauwatosa has pledged nearly $60 million in funding to support the development of a new apartment complex at the Mayfair Mall. In a recent city council meeting, a proposal was endorsed to create a TID district that would allocate $58 million to developers, with plans to construct 900 apartments. During the meeting, a substantial number of attendees voiced their opposition to the proposal, being concerned that the apartments are not designated low-income or affordable housing. The city of Milwaukee is revising its revenue forecasts for the newly introduced 2% sales tax. The latest estimate is $184 million a year, a bit below the initial projection of nearly $194 million. The implementation of the new sales tax is scheduled for January, with collection on initial tax revenue in March. With news on WAUK The Shaw, I'm Stuart J. Wattles.
Love your hometown? Don't miss the Devil's Advocates radio show on the road for the very first Fall in Love Hometown Tour 2023.
We will be broadcasting from northern Wisconsin, Chippewa Falls.
That's right. Find Mike and Dom broadcasting live from Loopy's Grill and Saloon overlooking the river in Chippewa Falls. Join them there starting at 4 p.m.
Road trip! With the Devil's Advocates Fall in Love Hometown Tour 2023 on your local Civic Media radio station and the app. The Maggie Dawn Show.
All of these things consistently come down to this willingness of people to give up their agency and the willingness of Donald Trump and those who support him to leverage and abuse people's trust in them to further their own personal power and enrichment.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weeknights at 6 p.m. on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. The Devil's Advocates Radio Show.
100 degrees.
Ramaswamy literally said global climate change, human and affected climate change is a hoax.
Ron DeSantis effectively pivoted on the debate stage, said, I'm not going to answer your damn question because it will expose us as climate change denialists, which puts them in a minority, certainly with younger voters. Young people care about the future of this world, Don.
The Devil's Advocates Radio Show.
Weekday afternoons from 4 until 6
on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Heating systems starting in 2024.
Good.
Critics say the law's targets were watered down, but it will still cut emissions from the home heating sector by nearly two-thirds. And finally, encouraging news for building electrification. A new study finds that even in sub-zero temperatures, all electric heat pumps actually outperform fossil fuels. Even at temperatures down to minus 30 degrees Fahrenheit, electric heat pumps are twice as efficient and cheaper than oil and gas heating systems. And that may be why in Norway, electric heat pumps today make up almost all heating installations.
And beginning next year, a whole bunch of Americans are going to be able to put heat pumps into their own homes and have them paid for under the Inflation Reduction Act.
Yep.
For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com.
Are you tired of think tank approved corporate news and commentary? Are you tired of CEOs telling you what to think, who to hate, and who to vote for? Well, welcome to the Rick Smith Show. We don't take orders from some boardroom, and we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, West Virginia Senator Joe Manchin was asked if... this is one of those, you ask a question, you know what the answer is going to be before you even you ask it. But you ask it anyway. Basically asking Manchin if he regrets holding up the child tax credit, which is now responsible for more than doubling child poverty. In fact, by like 60%, childhood poverty went up, the largest single year increase in history, or at least in the history of record keeping. And his response was that it's deeper than that. We all have to do our part. The federal government can't run everything. And I'm going, we're not asking the federal government to do everything, just asking them to do something. And I think feeding children, kind of a good something to be doing. But here to share some thoughts on this most recent Census Bureau report on, again, childhood poverty more than doubling. I've asked our good friend Morris Pearl to come talk with us. Morris is the chairman of the Patriotic Millionaires, patrioticmillionaires.org, the website. Morris, thanks for taking time for us.
One out of eight children in our country are living in poverty, and we're supposed to be proud of that?
Yeah.
That's like, I mean, that's not the kind of country where I want to be in. That's not the kind of country where I want my children and grandchildren to grow up. Does anybody like not work because they can somehow get a tax credit and not have to work? I've never met that person. I've never met somebody who like would prefer to somehow get a child tax credit and give up working. The people I know who don't work are actually very wealthy people, not poor people. Almost all of the people who live in homeless shelters in this city, I'm in New York City, have full-time jobs.
Yeah. No, it's not just New York City. It's here in my little town of Carlisle, Pennsylvania, too.
We have people who work full-time and are homeless. Of adults. The children don't work, mostly.
Not yet. Not give Republicans a chance. They will be.
It's just, like, it's just disgusting. I was at a party with one of our political leaders, you know, a major donor. And I said to this guy, oh, what do you think about this story in the paper about these guys in this homeless shelter? He said, well, people have to take responsibility for their decisions. You know, it's a guy who takes responsibility for being the son of a major real estate developer. And I said, well, what decisions did this 11-year-old kid on the front page of the paper in this disgusting homeless shelter make? And it's just like the people who are so far removed from this, they honestly believe that it's because they're hardworking or something that they're successful in life, and that other people are just lazy. And, well, if we take away all their benefits, then they'll work. Like, they're so far removed from the reality of so many Americans. It's just sad.
Well, it's infuriating, and I guess it shows our values. I mean, the reality is we have a political party in this country who keeps talking about that they're pro-life and how much they love the children, and yet when they had an opportunity, every Republican and Kirsten Sinema and Joe Manchin voted against extending this meager amount of money that made a massive difference in child poverty. I mean, we're talking about, you know, just a couple of extra bucks a month. That's it. And it's amazing to me how much positive that did. And to take that away, I got to tell you, as I said, when it happened, it's cruel to show these kids that there could be food in the house at the end of the month, that you couldn't maybe not have to worry where your next meal is going to come from. And then to yank that away, that's the height of cruelty for me.
Yeah. It's just, I mean, they probably honestly believe that everyone cheats because probably they know, well, that's what I would do if I had the opportunity. I would cheat. So it must be everyone else does too.
No,
they really believe that.
That is a perfect statement right there, because it's probably true. I mean, that, well, if they were there, I know I would take full advantage of it, without understanding that the people at the bottom, the vast majority, don't abuse the system. And what we found from research on this is that people use that money exactly the way it was supposed to be used, to put food on the table and keep a roof over people's heads.
Yeah. Yes. And that's, I mean, it's just, we need to judge our society by how we treat the least fortunate, not how we treat the multi-billionaires.
And speaking about the multi-billionaires and these huge corporations, I don't know if you saw this story, because as you know, the UAW is about to go on strike probably in hours if they don't come to an agreement with the big three. But Stellantis, one of the big three, announced just in the last couple of days that there's going to be a €500,000 stock buyback from September 11th through December 23rd. They're going to bring back €500 million into the coffers of the shareholders and the executives and the folks at the top. To me, this is a giant slap in the face to the workers who are simply asking to make a reasonable wage and have some bit of dignity in the workplace. To do this seems to me to be messaging and a massive slap in the face.
Yeah, I mean, right while they're in the middle of negotiating with their workers, to say, oh, we, the owners, we're going to take out €500 million. That's about $530 odd million. To say, we're going to take out $530 million for ourselves as the owners, and then tell you that you can't get the raise, that the same amount, percentage raise that we've already given to the executives. They're asking for 40% over the course of a multi-year agreement.
Right.
They're asking for a little less than 9% per year. And that's after years of givebacks under the previous union administration. So, like, it's just, yeah, I mean, it certainly looks bad. I mean, Yeah, I don't know what the union and the management will agree to eventually. I hope that they don't have a long, drawn-out strike. I hope we don't have a lot of people losing income for...
It's not good for business. It's not good for the country. It's not good. It's not good any way around. But here's what I know always happens. The companies end up spending 5-6 times of what it would have cost to give the workers what they earn. But it's all about keeping those people in their place. And we've been talking about this here recently with this Tim Gerner, who came out, this Australian real estate magnate, who said, you know, we need unemployment. We need to put those workers back in their place. You got Jim Cramer today on TV saying, I'd move the whole thing to Mexico. Because, again, you got to get those people back in their place.
It's just, like, we're not better people than the workers are. I mean, yes, every job I've had has involved, you know, working with computer spreadsheets in an air-conditioned office. Frankly, I'm probably less deserving of earning money than the guys who worked on the factory floor. There's no way I could do that for 8 hours a day. I mean, maybe I could if I had to earn a living, but I mean, I'm certainly glad that I had a different way of making a living than so many Americans do. But the idea that somehow they're uppity. I mean, that's what they used to say in the Jim Crow era about black people when they were lynching them. I mean, it's just not the American way. People have to be put in their place. I mean, that's absurd. It's absurd.
Yeah.
It's absurd.
But it is, again, it's the mentality that's out there. Because, you know, as this Tim Gerner guy said, you know, workers now think that we need them, you know, that, you know.
We do need them. They're right. I mean, you need labor and you need capital. They're both important.
Yes.
And both need to be rewarded. And yes, it's easier for the guys with the capital to negotiate because there's three of them, and there's 140,000 workers, 146,000. So that tens of thousands of workers have to have elections and vote and elect a president and send a committee of people to the negotiating, you know, whereas the auto companies can have a few lawyers each and they know what they're doing. So in a sense, the auto companies have a huge advantage because there's only three of them, but they need to understand that this doesn't work unless you have both sides working together. They'd be much better off, including the owners and the shareholders, if they developed a relationship of trust between the laborers, the workers, and the managements. I mean, and you'd actually get more done that way. But I guess they feel, oh, these people should be in their place. I mean,
you'll take what you get, and you won't throw a fit, as my mother used to say. Now, here's the thing. I watched the president today, you know, talk about the difference between MAGAnomics and Bidenomics. And it really is, you know, the very different view of the economy. You've got Republicans who've been pushing trickle-down economics for years, tax cuts for folks like you and corporate America. And then obviously, more hungry children, cuts to social programs, cuts to things that seniors need. And I think Biden pointed it out. He said under MAGAnomics, the top 0.1% of households, folks making over $4 million, would get a tax cut worth twice the average family salary. He asked, who's going to pay for that? He says Republicans in Congress finally released a budget with the answer, seniors and hardworking Americans. He said that MAGAnomics gives $5.2 trillion in tax cuts to the wealthy and big corporations, and cuts $700 billion from Social Security and $1 trillion from Medicare. Think about that. And really, that is the very, you know, stark difference between the two ideologies and the two economic visions, isn't it?
Yes. I mean, they have to understand, or they should understand, that the total amount of money that we make as investors is money we make that it doesn't trickle down, it trickles up. Those 146,000 auto workers, they probably all have iPhones or something, some kind of phones. They all pay their phone bills every month. They all pay their mortgage every month, their rent every month, their car payments. And that money that they pay every month, that trickles up to bankers and investors and people like me who sit here, you know, doing nothing but talking on the radio, you know, and that's how we make money. It trickles up from hundreds of thousands of people who each make these little payments every month. And it's like, it doesn't trickle down. That's like, whoever came up with that idea?
Well, this is the Reagan era.
Yes, yeah.
But, you know, here's the thing, and you bring up an excellent point that I think we need to probably spend more time on as a society, that the pendulum can't swing to one extreme or the other. It's not all about the wealthy or all about the working class, or it's not all about, you know, the red states or blue states or rural or urban. That, oddly enough, regardless of where you find yourself, we're all in this together. And at some point, that's got to be part of the message and the way forward.
Look, I'm not against rich people. I mean, I run an organization called Patriotic Millionaires. I think everybody should be a patriotic millionaire. Believe me, it's more fun than being poor. But I do think that we can only be successful if we live in a society filled with people who pay their bills every month. If people are living in an impoverished state and know their place and live in company towns and spend all, you know, get all of their money deducted from their paycheck for their company house and company beer or whatever, then there's no way for investors to make money either. And that doesn't work for us. We want to live in a country filled with middle-class people, people who have good jobs, probably union jobs, and can make enough money to go on vacation with their kids and spend money and go to restaurants and go, you know, do things and live their lives. And that's how business people in Michigan and New York and everywhere else in the country make money. It's just sad.
We've got a lot of work to do. But Morris, as always, I appreciate your input and your thoughts, your expertise. Thanks so much.
Great to talk to you, Rick. Thank you very much.
Our good friend Morris Pearl. Make sure you check out their website, patrioticmillionaires.org. We'll get links out on social media, or you can take a look at that. Going to take a quick break, right back with your thoughts. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425. Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, hours before the UAW goes on, going to possibly go on strike, you've got one of the big three saying we're going to take €500 million out of the company and stuff it into our pockets. And how do you like them apples? As I said earlier, you got Jim Cramer saying just move the whole operation to Mexico. And again, you look at these CEOs, you look at these executives. It's all about, you know, screw you, working people. Hooray for us, and, well, the you-know-what with you. And I look at this story that just came across my desk, and thank you, Bill, for sending this to me. As people know, I worked for a company called Roadway Express years ago. They got bought out by Yellow Freight. Yellow Freight turned that into YRC, Yellow Roadway Corporation, then eventually turned it into Yellow, back to Yellow Freight again, and then went belly up. Just within the last couple of months. Turns out, according to Bloomberg, that they paid their executives $4.6 million in retention bonuses as they're closing the doors. Uh-oh. Now, these are the people who ran this company straight into the ground. This had been one of the biggest trucking companies in the country. They at one point were number one or number two for years. Them and Roadway Express were number one and number two. When they were number two, they bought Roadway, which was number one, and they were going to build this massive powerhouse. And somehow they couldn't figure out how the redundancy they had in terminals, because most places you went, there was a Roadway terminal and a Yellow terminal right next to each other. They couldn't figure out how their idea was to take on massive debt and that they could, you know, they could pay it off by screwing over the workers and closing places and getting rid of workers. What they hadn't planned on is, well, most customers at the time were brand specific, so they end up losing a ton of customers. And then the recession of 2008, the collapse happened, and they were screwed. And these executives put themselves in this mess. And what do? And we do this all the time. Whenever these companies, you know, go belly up, we have to have retention bonuses, which means that they're going to take an enormous amount of money out of the company that could have gone into paying healthcare and retirement and some of the other things that the workers, because as I understand, some of the workers, as I've been told, haven't gotten their vacation pay yet. But these guys, they got their retention bonuses. When do we wake up and realize something stinks in Denmark? There's something wrong here. For instance, you want to talk about something wrong? I looked at Marsha Blackburn's Twitter account, senator from Tennessee. She writes, Obamacare has been an utter disaster for Americans with pre-existing conditions. Now remember, if you had pre-existing conditions before the Affordable Care Act, you didn't get insurance anywhere. You were done. Nobody was going to cover you. She tweets this article by a think tank, a right-wing think tank, and a Kansas representative, basically saying that the Affordable Care Act is unaffordable because a hypothetical family with children with birth defects, because of the co-pays and all of the out-of-pocket expenses, if they chose the bronze plan, they could be on the hook for $18,000 a year. And this is true. It's absolutely true. If they chose the bronze plan and they got zero premiums, it didn't cost them anything to get it. If they did use it for the whole year, it would cost $18,000 a year. You would, in this situation, you would clearly pay premiums and get the lower deductibles. But to have Marsha Blackburn tweet this out as if somehow this is going to make people go, well, Obamacare is horrible. See, look how bad it is. When it's people like Marsha Blackburn who have stopped every attempt to fix this for the last 13 years. She's one of the people who wants to go, no, you have pre-existing conditions. You should be uninsurable. You should get nothing. Because remember, and I'm asking Marsha, where's your plan? Where's your healthcare plan? I know Donald Trump said he had a great plan. He had an amazing plan. It was a beautiful plan. It was a fabulous plan with the best plans, with the best words, only on blank pages. Because there was never a plan. There's never a thought, never an idea. It was replace. It was real. How did it go? Repeal and replace. And you know what they were going to replace it with? Pay or die. And it's this kind of ridiculous nonsense that I at some point I hope we wake up to and call and throw people like Marsha Blackburn out for doing dumb stuff like this. Because she could fix this. She tweeted this out with no fix. She is a senator. She is one of the 100 people in that body who can make a difference. She can fix this. But she chooses just to throw stones at glass houses. She chooses to be a chaos merchant. To continue to feed the outrage machine. Without actually doing her freaking job. And look, is Obamacare perfect? No. I wanted better. We should have gotten better. But we got what was possible. Because, look, there were corporate Democrats, too, Trader Joe Lieberman, Max Backdoras. There are a number of Democrats. And look, Democrats tick me off more than anybody. Look, I understand. Republicans hate working people. I'm never getting anything. I never expect to get anything from a Republican. Ever. But Democrats should know better. This is one of those moments, the best we could get. And the hope at the time was that over time, we would make it better, like we did with Medicare. The beginning, Medicare wasn't all that great. And Congress came together and they fixed problems as they came up. We had a functional democracy. We had a functional legislative body that actually listened to the will of the people who seniors were saying, we need help with this, this, and this. And they addressed it. We've been talking about this for 10 years now. This is not new. But what it is, it's coming up on election time. So we need to get people outraged. We need to get people all tingly in the panties and up and all wadded up. Because, well, Obamacare. Well, this dog don't hunt no more. The reality is, they could have fixed this. They could have done something for over a decade. And they have chosen not to. Just like childhood poverty, we could eliminate it easily. We just saw. And what'd they do? They threw those kids under the bus. Why? Tax cuts for rich people. Doesn't it make you mad? Doesn't it want to make you vote for somebody who cares? I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1929. That was the day that Ella Mae Wiggins was gunned down on her way to a rally of striking textile workers in North Carolina. Ella Mae was born in the mountains of Tennessee. Her father was a lumberjack who was killed on the job. She and her brother had entered the textile mills to help support their family. She married another mill employee and they had 7 children. When her husband left, Ella Mae struggled to keep her family afloat. When the Great Depression came, textile mill workers were subject to the, quote, stretch out. Owners demanded that fewer workers quicken their pace to produce the same results. In response, textile workers began to organize and strike in Gaston County, the heart of the Southern textile industry. Ella Mae became a local leader of the National Textile Workers Union. She advocated for organizing both white and black workers. She became known for leading the other workers in song. One of her most poignant songs was the Mill Mother's Lament. The lyrics told her personal struggle of a mother trying to support her children. On the day she was killed, Ella Mae was in a truck heading to the workers' rally. They were met by an armed mob deployed by the mill owners. The unarmed workers turned their truck around, but the mob chased them and gunned down Ella Mae. 5 people were charged, but they were acquitted of her murder.
We leave our homes in the morning. We kiss our children goodbye. While we slave for the bosses, our children scream and cry.
Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show.
Our grocery bills to pay. Not a cent to spend for clothing. Not a cent to lay.
Back to school. Bright-eyed youngsters are now back in our public classrooms, filled with questions about the world around them. Questions like, what happened to our school library? And where did our librarians go? Sadly, these wholly beneficial, caring educators are being dumped in school trash bins by loopy right-wing ideologues who are out to impose their bigotry and ignorance on America. They've been on a rampage of banning books and demonizing teachers, but now the extremists are saying that's not stupid enough. Let's also launch a witch hunt against librarians. This authoritarian assault, funded by a clique of far-right billionaires and coordinated by their front groups, has been popping off across the country. But leave it to Texas Governor Greg Abbott to push it from extreme to totalitarianism. He has unilaterally seized control of Houston's school district, the largest, most diverse in Texas, installing his own whip-cracking dictatorial overseer. Mike Miles, a former Army Ranger and CEO of a corporate school chain, promptly decreed that to improve reading scores in his district, he would first eliminate librarians from 28 schools in black and Latino neighborhoods and, second, turn their libraries into centers where students who misbehave will be disciplined. Also, Abbott's Education Czar demands that all teachers there must reapply for their jobs, agree to follow a centrally scripted curriculum, and be monitored by classroom cameras. Of course, elimination of independent educational resources and regimentation of instruction will reduce schools to state institutions for obedience training. This is Jim Hightower saying, and that's the point. The GOP's push to remake education is a billionaire's wet dream of a compliant, subservient workforce. Don't ask questions, just keep pulling that plow.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
You may remember last time around, it was 2 years ago, actually. Wow, was it that long ago? Yeah, I guess it was. We met a guy who was running for state house here in my state of Pennsylvania and had a really cool gimmick idea to raise funds. Because, look, raising money as a candidate, really difficult, especially in races that aren't viewed as competitive. And look, I say every race can be competitive with the right candidate, the right resource, and the right energy. And when I saw this guy, you know, he had long hair down to, you know, almost to you know where. Beautiful, huge head of hair. And he ran on, should I cut it or keep it? And you could make donations. I obviously made a donation in the cut it category. And ultimately, he did. He followed through on actually cutting a lot of hair, and then donated it to a charity, which I thought was fantastic as well. Well, he is now running again, and I can't wait to hear what he's got in store for us this time around. That's why I've asked Dan Almanique to come talk with us. Dan is a candidate for the 92nd House District here in Pennsylvania. DanForPA92.com is the website if you want to check that out. Dan, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, thank you for having me. It's a real pleasure to be back on the show. And yeah, not quite as long this time around.
I got to tell you, that gimmick, it stuck in my mind. And I'm sure it's stuck in other people's minds as well, which again, branding is huge, but also raising a couple of bucks just as important.
Yeah, I think that was one of our most successful fundraisers we had last year. And like you said, that is the main, the biggest hurdle, especially for a first time candidate like I was last time in a very rural red part of Pennsylvania. You know, we had a great community support, but trying to get some of those extra dollars in, you know, that was a big one of the bigger boosts we had.
Now, I can't imagine, you know, 2 years ago, things were bad. Things were crazy. Worse. Yes.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, there's just been so much that's been going on with the PA House, if you've been following any of that, and your listeners probably have varying degrees of knowledge. But that's where my focus has been, is really trying to, you know, keep tabs on what's going on. And it's been a kind of a nightmare just with all the special elections going on. You know, the majority has been going back and forth, Dems up by one, no, yes, this, that. We had the speaker drama earlier in the year. So it's just been a real crazy year in PA politics and in the House, especially. But they have gotten a lot of work done when they did have the Democrat majority and they got a lot of bills passed. Unfortunately, you know, for us here in Northern York County in our rural area in the 92nd, our representative has just been even worse than before because she's in the minority. So it's really sad, you know, when you have somebody like her in the House voting against and advocating against giving kids lunch and breakfast at school. You know, lobbying and calling out, voting against property tax relief for senior citizens, which are the majority of my neighbors, you know, have been in their homes for 30, 40, 50 years and on fixed incomes, you know, and it really speaks to a lot of the things that you've been talking about this whole hour is, you know, the class warfare that is going on and the corporate greed in the country as a whole. You know, it all trickles down and filters out into our communities.
Yeah. And, you know, I look at someone like Don Kiefer or my representative, Barb Gleim. There's always the question in my mind, are they opposing, you know, school lunch programs or education programs or, you know, whatever it is they're opposed to because they truly are opposed to them? Or is it just because Democrats proposed it? Or because these are people who tell us how much they love the children and they're pro-life and all this stuff. And I wish their rhetoric would match their voting records, because their voting records are destructive to communities and harmful to education, healthcare, you name it. Their voting records are terrible.
Oh, yeah, it's 100%. And I know we know for a fact, because we have, you know, you can go and check the records. We know that she's in the pocket of PA billionaire Jeffrey Yass, because he made a $20,000 campaign donation to her last October. And who knows how much he's given, you know, this year, because there's no reporting period for state representatives until the end of the year annual report is due. So, I mean, he could be writing her 5-6-figure checks, you know, every month for all we know, you know, it's just ridiculous. So when she comes out and tries to like support the voucher program that Shapiro had to put a stop to, or, you know, the free lunches and that kind of stuff, like, she's not representing the community. She's representing her billionaire Lord Almighty over there.
So, you know, about every campaign's about what you're going to do. And I, you know, when I used to advise candidates, I would say, you know, it's more about what you're going to do to make my life better. It's not about you. It's about what you plan on doing, what your priorities are to help your neighbors. So in this election cycle, I know we had talked in the past, what is the priority right now?
The biggest priority for me is to get us past the culture wars that you know, Barb and Dawn and those, that block of candidates really represent. It's we have to get past the culture wars and realize that it's really the economic issues that are holding a lot of things back from being really great. We have, as I said, the property tax and stretching our seniors to the brink. There was an article I read just earlier, either today or a couple days ago, where the elderly is the fastest growing homeless population because they can't afford to keep their homes. And in Pennsylvania here, a large part of that is due to how our property tax and how we fund our schools. So it's all interconnected. You know, she wants to talk about how our schools are failing, but, you know, if a parent has to work 2 to 3 jobs, they can't spend the time at home with their kids going over homework and things like that, that, you know, I remember my parents being able to do when I was growing up and in school. So it's all our economic policies. And I know that's kind of a weird thing for a Democrat to talk about. But that was one of the things that, you know, you mentioned earlier in the show as well, is, you know, that's the reason we need to turn this around. We need to talk about what we're going to do to make people's lives better. And it's so much of it revolves around this economic and corporate culture warfare that we're living under.
Yeah, there's nothing unusual or weird about that, Dan. The reality is, I say this all the time, I'm a working class liberal. My true north is how we're going to make working people's lives better. You know, be that through strengthening union rights, be that through increasing the minimum wage, be that through prevailing wage laws, be that through project labor agreement, be that however may. But it's about making people's lives better. And that should be the true north of every Democrat. And no one should ever apologize or second guess the fact that we want to make people's lives better.
No, I mean, that's the way I see government. You know, it's not to fix it's not to dictate, you know, it's America. We have these freedoms, and it's, you know, the government's role is to make sure that our roads are paved, that our, you know, that there's a place for education, that everybody has an equal chance to get ahead. It's not the big scary socialism demon that we hear a lot about.
Earlier I talked about Joe Manchin, who said he has no regrets in undoing the child tax credit. One of the things that I'm now saying has to happen is that has to filter down to the state level. I would like to see Pennsylvania, I'd like to see all of the states that we have affiliates in, move legislation to ensure that child poverty is something that we eradicate. Because, you know, I don't know if you saw the Census Bureau numbers, but yeah, we were down to just over 5% of children in poverty. That is remarkable. And then because of bad policy, it is now more than doubled. So it tells me a very small investment. We can eradicate child poverty. We could end homelessness. We can do a lot of things if we wanted to. We just have to have the political will and people like you getting into the halls of power to move some of that stuff. Do you agree that we have the power to do that stuff?
Oh, 100%. You know, that's the kind of stuff that we should be focused on. And I'm a working class father as well, you know, raising a teenage daughter. That's kind of why I got into this in the first place last year. You know, we're like the wealthiest nation in the world, and we can't feed our kids at school without somebody throwing a fit or calling it reliance on the government. Like, it's mind-boggling.
So what does your daughter think of all this? I mean, yeah, I can't imagine what your teenager thinks. What does she think of all this?
She really doesn't care. Kind of like my wife. You know, they're kind of, you know, you go do your thing and talk to your people, and then, you know, but it's a balance, because, you know, between work and family, and, you know, it takes a lot, especially as somebody that, you know, can't spend their whole days out in the community like I would like to be able to do. But we have a plan to, you know, do as much of that as possible and get out and talk to folks. And really, I think it's really just a matter of explaining to people how your state representative is voting, and if you agree with those votes.
Yeah. And the policies that they're attempting to move in the direction they want to take the state. Because, you know, look, they do a great job of feeding the outrage, not very much about actually having policy to solve problems and move us forward. So let me ask you, you know, what can we do to help? I know fundraising is a big thing. I know boots on the ground is a big thing. If someone wanted to help, wanted to get in contact, what do they do?
Yeah, the easiest thing to do is you can go to my website, danforpa92.com. There's a contact form and stuff on there. I'm also on Twitter. Don't refer to it as a letter. It's Twitter. And on the Facebook as well. So, you know, any of those, it's danforpa92. Happy to, if you want to reach out, email would be teamdan@danforpa92 as well. That's a good way. And yeah, I mean, those are the two biggest hurdles that we face, is money and manpower, and you know, anybody that can help us. One can lead to the other and vice versa. So that's going to be where we make a difference in talking to our neighbors and trying to bring our neighborhood a little closer together like we used to be. Because
yeah, attempt to reunite them. No, yeah, I mean, here's the thing, because as you pointed out earlier, your opponent is well funded by billionaires. And it's one of those things that, you know, I always throw a quote out from my grandfather in these moments. You know, if a rich guy is going to take a buck out of his pocket to tell you don't need something, you better spend two to get it, because they understand return on investment. So if someone like Jeffrey Yaz is spending money on your opponent to put that person in the hall of power, maybe we working people need to see her out.
Oh, 100%. And the other thing that I'd like to add too is, you know, one thing that's really interesting, that's going to be really interesting about this race come next year, is that we are in a hotbed of political activity here in Northern York County. Between the, obviously you're going to have the presidential race and the Senate race. We also have a state Senate seat that's up for grabs, and perhaps one of the top five most intriguing U.S. congressional races against traitor Scott Perry and insurrectionists there. So, you know, this is going to be a very politically active area come next year, and we're ready to gear up and to take the fight to them.
Yeah, final line of questioning on this, because education to me is a huge part of this. And, you know, as we talked about in the break before coming into this segment, you've got these maniac moms for misery who are out here causing all kinds of chaos. Your opponent being, you know, right into the mix of all of that stuff. Public education to me is very important. If we working people lose access to public education, well-funded, high-quality community schools, there's no going back. There's no undoing the damage that will happen to future generations. So for me, this is one of those hills that I hope people, especially folks like you, are willing to take the hill and fight for.
Yeah, I mean, that's really probably the number one priority for me, as especially, you know, my daughter just started high school this year, and we have 6 open board seats, and I am scared to death that, you know, that unpopular contingent is going to come in. And we had, we have state representatives who are funding those candidates on the other side of those aisles that are wanting to destroy public education as we know it. They were shooting robotechs, you know, they were doing calls in the primary, you know, it's all this like real Republican stuff and this and that, because heaven forbid we work together to solve problems, you know. So this is the importance of this year cannot be understated, you know, and I am definitely aware of that, announcing this early, but we need the ramp up time. But we cannot forget the importance of this year's elections, local elections, our school boards, and especially the judges here in PA that are going to, you know, could have a tremendous impact on even what happens next year. So, you know, twice a year, every year.
There you go. Dan, I wish you the best. I hope folks will check out the website, danforpa92.com. We'll get links out on social media if you want to throw a donation. Maybe make some calls, maybe knock some doors, kiss some babies, stuff like that. Get involved, get active, get engaged. But Dan, I appreciate the time. Good on you. And if there's anything I can do, let me know.
Thank you, Rick. Appreciate your support, and glad to be back on with you.
Thanks so much, Dan Almany. He is candidate for the House District 92 here in Pennsylvania. Again, danforpa92.com, the website. Check that out. Going to take a quick break. Right back. Stick around. You'll listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Think Tank approved corporate news and commentary? Are you tired of CEOs telling you what to think, who to hate, and who to vote for? Well, welcome to the Rick Smith Show. We don't take orders from some boardroom, and we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1959. The United States Congress had passed the Landrum-Griffin Act. President Eisenhower signed the new law, which was also called the Labor Management Reporting and Disclosure Act. The new law had lasting consequences for the way unions operated. One of the reasons Congress passed the law was alleged abuses of power by some union leaders. The law aimed to protect workers by requiring secret ballots for union elections and protecting freedom of speech within unions. It also required unions to submit annual financial reports to the Department of Labor. While these requirements protected members' rights, not all of the provisions were so positive. The law was passed during the 1950s Red Scare. It required that no one could hold a union-elected leadership position until 5 years after leaving the Communist Party. This part of the law was declared unconstitutional in 1965. The law also expanded the anti-labor provisions of the Taft-Hartley Act. The Taft-Hartley Act prohibited some union activities, such as sympathetic strikes and secondary boycotts. The Landrum-Griffith Act took this all a step further. It tightened the boycott restrictions. It also put limits on the union's ability to picket while organizing for recognition. It placed considerable new federal reporting requirements on the unions. Despite these further restrictions upon labor unions, union workers comprised a third of the total workforce in the United States during the 1950s, the highest percentage of union workers in U.S. history. But the restrictive policies laid out in Taft-Hartley and Landrum-Griffin would help slow and eventually reverse this growth of unionization. Today, less than 12% of U.S. workers are members of unions. Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, and follow us on the Twitters at Labor History in 2. I got to tell you, I really like Dan. Good guy. Make sure you check out the website. DanForPA92.com. We'll get links out on social media. You can take a look at that. Because look, running a campaign, expensive, difficult. I give anyone credit who's willing to throw their hat into the ring and fight the good fight, especially in districts where you've got, you've got incumbents who have massive resources funded by billionaires who want to hack up our education system. Now, I did come across a couple of interesting education stories. You look at Texas, for instance. Texas evidently had the most book bans last year. Yay, good for Texas. Look at that. They made the most attempts to ban books and restrict books, according to the American Library Association. And are you surprised? Kind of, a little bit. I thought Florida would have been that. A friend sent me a story today about North Carolina. Evidently, North Carolina requires public school teachers to hold a license. And according to this person who sent me this story, evidently, North Carolina is now sending public funding to private schools, private religious schools. And these private religious schools, evidently, they have found... this is one of those weird things to me. Evidently, these teachers who work for these private religious schools have to prove their Christian faith. I can't believe I'm going to say this. This is one of those things where you go, I don't even know how you get into a situation like this. But evidently, in order to prove their faith, they have to speak in tongue. They have to speak in tongues, whatever that means. Now, I've seen people do this, and I've often asked them where they learned it. I mean, other than if, or is it just a bunch of gibberish and a bunch of, I don't know, but is this something that they're supposed to be teaching children? And are you okay with that? Now, remember, the moms, the maniac moms from Misery, they're out there saying they're indoctrinating our children. I'm quite concerned about this whole speaking in tongues thing. I'm quite concerned with the this being a requirement. I'm in this spot where I don't think tax dollars should go to that. I just don't. And the weird thing is look, I used to believe that, people of faith were good, decent, honest people. That, they were attempting to lead better lives by being better people, following the golden rule, following Christ's teaching, all this stuff. But I got to tell you, some of our religious extremist folks are a bit kooky. I mean, Christian Sharia law is not far down the road. And I was reading this story today about, again, religious folk who were doing this vlog on YouTube about parenting. And her name is Ruby Frank. Evidently, she's facing a whole bunch of child abuse charges because evidently her kid went to the neighbor looking for food and water, and then the neighbor happened to see an emaciated, malnourished child with duct tape around their extremities. and called the police. And the police went and then arrested this woman and her cohort on felony charges, and no bond, as I understand it, this part. Each charge, 15 years in prison, possibly. But this is someone who was giving parental advice, and a lot of it was really ugly, mean, you know, telling people that they didn't send the 6-year-old to school with lunch because she was bad and nobody better give her food because she's got to learn. And
you're listening to The Shaw, WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.